Gittin Perik Aleph, Mishnah Vav 1-6, the last of the Perik, and we continue to enumerate the ways in which a get for a divorce or emancipation of a slave is different than other kinds of contracts. We actually have two different topics here in our Mishnah. One will talk about the topic of Zechia, and the other one will talk about the Matnas Shchiv Meira, both of which I'll explain in turn. First, I'll talk about Zechia. So Zechia, the principle of what's called Zachin Adam Shlo Bafanav, not translating, but means that if Reuven wants to give something to his friend Shimon, but Shimon's not present, and if he gives it to Levi instead to acquire on behalf of Shimon, so as soon as Levi acquires it, he gets a hold of it, he picks it up, so then that automatically makes the object now Shimon's possession. In other words, Levi is acquiring it on behalf of Shimon. And the truth is, and we don't even need a Reuven in the story, even if just Levi would pick something off of the ground that he found and he intends to acquire it on behalf of Shimon, that would also work. That's called Zechia. According to Rashi, it works through a principle of Shlichus, making an agent, and the idea is that anybody who's getting a benefit and getting something would, although it's not spoken out, tacitly he would approve of, in this case, Levi being his agent to acquire it in his behalf. Others learn, other Rishonim learn, that Zechia isn't through Shlichus, that's its own mechanism all to itself. Whatever the case is, the point is that Zechia works, acquiring on behalf of another person, provided that it's to the person's benefit. If there is some elements of benefit, but other material detriments that are included in this acquisition, so then there's no way to know that Shimon would consent to Levi acquiring his behalf. Maybe Shimon doesn't want it after all. And therefore, when there's an element of detriment, so then Zechia doesn't work. There has to be an explicit authorization from Shimon to authorize Levi to acquire these rights or obligations, whatever it is, on his behalf. Now, the jargon, Talmudic jargon, Mishnah jargon, is Zachin Adam Shelo Bafanav, which literally means you're able to acquire something on someone's for someone else's benefit without him being present, although his presence isn't the issue. Really, it's Shelo Bafanav means, not literally, but it means without his consent, his pre-authorization. And on the other hand, you're not allowed Ein Chavin. You can't do something to someone's detriment, Ela Bafanav, unless it's literally in front of him, but you know what that means, with his consent, with his authorization. So that being the case here, our Mishnah is going to discuss the case in which Reuven's married, he gives something, let's say a get for starters, to Shimon to deliver the get to his wife. So if it were to her benefit, so then we'd say Zechia. It would work as soon as Shimon gets a hold of the get. If it would be good for the woman, so then it would be hers already. Just if he said, here, give this $100 to my wife, as soon as Reuven gives it to Shimon, Shimon takes $100, now it becomes the wife's automatically. But that's not the case with the get, because the get is not to her benefit. There's certainly an element of detriment. She loses her all the rights that were afforded to her by her ksuba. He has to stop. He doesn't have to provide for her food anymore and so on. And therefore, there's no way to give a... Reuven can't effect divorce by giving it to his friend Shimon on behalf of his wife unless the wife pre-authorized it. Okay? Now, with that in mind, the Mishnah says, Ha'omer ten get zele ishti. If a person says, give this get to my wife, and he puts the get, Reuven puts the get in the hand of Shimon, or similarly, ushtar shichrur zele avdi, or if a person gives a document, a bill of emancipation, Reuven gives to Shimon and says, give this to my slave, the Eved Kanani, that's his writ of emancipation, so he can go free. So then, imrata lachzor b'shnehen yachzor divrei Rav Meir. Rav Meir holds, in both cases, if Reuven decides that he has a change of heart and wants to get the bill of divorce or of emancipation back, he can take it back, which is another way of saying the fact that Shimon received it in his hand doesn't automatically make it now the intended recipients, because this is not an element, this is not totally to the person's benefit. So Rav Meir holds that even one's freedom that is granted to a slave is not totally to his benefit, because while he is an Eved Kanani, he has a life of license in which he can sleep with all the other Shifcha Kananos, all the other non-Jewish slaves around, who, and that lifestyle is something that that appeals him. As soon as he becomes a mishtachrur, he becomes emancipated. So then he now is a regular Jew, a convert, and he no longer can sleep around with those women. He has to marry a regular Jewish woman and have a normal family. So he might not like that, and therefore, since that's a significant detriment, that would be considered to be a issue of chav and shlo b'fanav, and therefore even the would-be emancipated slave isn't freed just because Reuven gave the writ of emancipation to Levi in his behalf. No, he has to accept it, just like a woman who wouldn't want to be divorced against her will necessarily. V'chamim omrim begitei nashim. He said, yes, it's true when it comes to for divorce documents. You can't divorce a woman unless she authorized Shimon to receive the get in her bath. Avalo b'shechurei avadim, but not with the emancipation of slaves. Lefi, because the principle is shezachin la'adav shlo b'fanav. You can benefit a person even without his consent, which is the case of the slave. The slave, everyone wants their freedom, and freedom is worth everything. So the fact that the slave can become free is certainly a benefit to him, unmitigated benefit. And therefore, as soon as Shimon accepts the writ of emancipation on behalf of Reuven's slave, the slave is free and there's no taking it back. The Chacham's opinion here totally discounts the issue of the license he has regarding the other Shifchas Kananos. They say that's not a material benefit in contrast to one's total freedom, autonomy, ability to set up a normal family, etc. So therefore they discount that as altogether being significant, and therefore they say it's a full pure zechia. However, when it comes to the woman's divorce, ve'ein chavin lo ela b'fanav. You can't do something to a person's detriment to assign rights or transfer rights unless he gives his explicit authorization, consent, and the woman didn't authorize Shimon to receive her get in her behalf, and therefore he can't receive it on her behalf. She'ein yirtze shelo lazun es avdo, because if a person... Sorry about that, Bradley, maybe. She'im yirtze shelo lazun es avdo, if a person wants to not feed his slave, rashai, it's within his legal right. V'shelo lazun es ishto, eino rashai. In contrast, if he doesn't want to provide for his wife food, he's not allowed to do that. In other words, the Chacham see the issue, they totally discount the issue of the debauchery life situation. They just say, listen, it's all a matter of providing for one's basic needs. The husband must provide for his wife's needs, and therefore she's losing a lot by getting divorced. Therefore, it's chavin. It's a detriment to her. However, when it comes to a slave, anyways, technically speaking, the owner of a slave need not, we're talking Eved Kanani here, need not provide for his, you know, his food. He could tell the slave, you know, you go and go and, you know, go to collect from charity or something. It's not my problem to provide you the food. Figure it out yourself. And since that's the case, the slave anyways doesn't have any legal rights that he's losing when he becomes emancipated. So therefore, it's not a problem, says the Chachamim and the Halacha, really. Now, they're not done yet. Rabbi Meir isn't going to argue the point about the life of debauchery. He says, listen, even according to you, where we're talking about just, you know, food and basic sustenance. So Amar Lahem, says Rabbi Meir back to the Chachamim, Vahare hu posel es avdo min hatruma. If the owner is a Kohen, so the rule is that since the owner of the Eved, the slave, he makes a kinyan in his nefesh, he owns his person, so there the Torah allows for the members of one's household as a Kohen, including his wife, his children, and his animals, and his slaves, to also eat truma, the gifts that go to the Kohen. Now, truma is available inexpensively in the markets. It's cheaper than regular food because there's lots of supply, not that much demand, relatively speaking. And that being the case, the Eved could have access to, like, I'll call it cheap food, which is no longer the case because once he is emancipated, he's no longer part of the Kohen's household, and therefore he's no longer allowed to eat truma. So he's losing out on something. So Reb Meir says, listen, at least in mitzvah regards to a Eved who's owned by a Kohen, that it's a chavin, it's a to his detriment to be emancipated, at least in a material way, and therefore he would need to authorize the receiving of the bill of emancipation for himself to be divorced, to be emancipated. So they answer back, the Chacham disagree. So maybe I didn't read that well. I'm sorry. Let me make sure I read the word of the mission properly. Amar Lahem, Reb Meir says back to them, Harehu posel es avdo min hatruma, kashem shu posel es ishto. The same way once a man divorced his wife, and he's a Kohen, she no longer can eat truma as a divorcee. So to the Eved, can't eat truma anymore once he is emancipated. So that's to a detriment. Amru lo, but the Chacham reject that. They say, Mipneishu kinyano. They say, no. His ability to eat truma, that legal right that he has nothing to do with being an Eved, per se. It has to do with the fact that he is the possession of the Kohen. And that being the case, the Kohen, you know, for any time he wanted to, even if the Eved ran away, he could say, listen, Eved, I'm selling you, you know, for 50 cents to my next door neighbor, the non-Kohen, and now you're still an Eved, and now you can't eat truma. So the point is, his ability to eat truma is not part of being free or not free, it's a matter of just being part of the Kohen's household, which itself is a separate issue. And therefore, said the Chachamim, even for a Kohen, it's pure benefit for his Eved to be emancipated, and therefore, as soon as the owner of the Eved gives the Get Shechrur, the emancipation document, to anybody else on his behalf, on the Eved's behalf, so then the Eved is automatically emancipated, and the owner cannot take it back. And that will be the halacha, that for women, you could take it back because they're not divorced, but for an Eved, it's all benefit, and therefore, there's a way to take it back. As soon as you give it to another person, the Eved becomes totally free. Now, a new topic altogether, really. This topic really is revolving around the issue of the matna shchiv meira, which means, we learned it back in Peah, it's the gift, it's a rabbinic enactment that says, I'm not going to translate yet, it's a rabbinic enactment that says, if a person is on his deathbed and he wants to settle his financial affairs, so we made a special dispensation for him, a special leniency. Usually when it comes to transferring things, rights, objects, whatever it is, so there needs to be a maisa kinyan. It needs to be some act which effects the transfer. So, meaning if I'm giving you my pen, I can't just say the pen is yours. You have to pick it up to acquire the pen. I can't just tell you my field is yours. You have to receive a document that says it's yours, and so on. So words alone, just an oral commitment, don't have any, in any case, effect kinyanam, don't make transactions, don't affect transfers, and therefore they're not really binding. So under normal circumstances, if I say, I'm giving my pen to you, but you don't pick it up, and then I die, so then the rightful owner of the pen are my heirs and not you, even though I said it in front of them. It doesn't matter, because you didn't acquire it yet. Notwithstanding that, the rabbis made this leniency for what's called the shchiv meira, a person who is literally lying down for bad things. It means a person on his deathbed. And the thought was that if a person feels that he hasn't sorted out his financial affairs, and now he's, you know, on his deathbed, so he's going to be very upset by that. And the upset he has by not being able to sort his affairs out is going to expedite his death. He'll die sooner. And therefore, because of his upsetness. And therefore, in order to allay those concerns, we tell a person, and it's halakhically binding, that the verbal, the oral statement of a shchiv meiras, when on their deathbed, who thinks they're on a deathbed, assuming that they're provided that, they're giving something based on the fact that they think they're dying. So that will be as if it was written down and handed over. It means it's actually binding. So that will put a person who's on his deathbed's mind at ease. So now, that means that if on my deathbed I say, oh, I forgot to give the pen I promised my nephew to him, please make sure he gets it, I'm giving it to him now, and then I die. So then, upon my death, and this is really the mechanism is it becomes part of the Yerusha. So when I die, the pen now goes over to my nephew and not to my son, because that's the rabbinic enactment of the Matna Shchiv Meira. Important to know, it has to be that the person who's doing the gifting is motivated by the fact that he's dying, not just that, oh, I forgot it's my nephew's birthday today, I didn't send him a present. That wouldn't be good enough. So the sugya there in Pei, if you recall, is if a person doesn't explicitly say he's giving it because he's dying, and then he only gives some things but retains other things, then we don't know if he was doing it because he was dying or just because he wanted to give some gifts away. In contrast, if a person gave everything away, so then we could anyways have a presumption that he was acting because he was about to die, and therefore his oral statements will be binding as if they were written and handed over. Now, since the mechanism is, it's as if it's written down and passes through a Yerusha, so it only takes effect after the Shchiv Meira actually dies. So if he doesn't die, he could say, you know what, I changed my mind, I want to take my pen back, and he would get it back. It's only binding upon death and passes Yerusha. So similarly now, when it comes to, let's say, giving a get. So if I say, give my wife a get, but I say it just verbally, I don't want to hand it over to anybody. So since the mechanism of the Shechid Merah only works through Yerusha, once I'm dead, my wife is already a widow. And now there's no way to give it after I die. You can't even make sure there's even the Shlichus doesn't work after a person insists, you know, instructs his agent to act once he's dead. Same goes with the slave. I want to give my slave his freedom, but only pass it to him after I die through Yerusha. That's not going to help anything, because once I'm dead, the slave now automatically passes to my heirs, and therefore he can't receive this bill of emancipation. Okay, so that's the Mishnah's point over here, which says as follows. Ha'omer, if a person on his deathbed says, Tenu get ze le'ishti. Now notice here, unlike the first case where it said 10, singular, 10 get ze le'ishti, give this get, which understanding is saying acquired on her behalf. But here, Tenu, talking to lots of people, there's no get being handed over. It's saying, I'm telling people, write a get for my wife. But there's no actual get being handed over now. And that's important for the next part of the Mishnah. So then, if a person says, Ushtar shechrur ze la'avdi, or give a bill of emancipation to my slave. So since everyone's going to agree now, even the Chachamim, that since there's no actual handing over of a contract, it's just an oral statement, so then it's not going to be binding because it would pass on after effective only once he dies, and once he dies, it's too late to now grant the slave who's been now inherited by the children his freedom. So v'meis, if that person dies, lo yitnu la'achar misa, it's too late, and neither the get nor the get shechrur is given after death, which would mean, just for example, let's say the person's on a deathbed and he says, oh my goodness, I have no children, my poor wife's going to fall to my terrible brother and for Yibum, I don't want that, please give her a get now, and then he dies. So our Mishnah is saying, well, too bad, she's dying as a widow, not as a divorcee, and therefore she'd fall to Yibum and can't remarry until she does Yibum or Chalitza with the brother. In contrast, if a person says, Tenu mane le'ish ploni, a person on his deathbed says, please give 100 silver coins to so-and-so, v'meis, and then he dies, yitnu la'achar misa. So then, assuming it conformed to the rules of matnas shechid merah, the gifts that are given from a person on his deathbed, so it's carried out, and after the person dies, and only then, are those 100 coins given to the person who he named, and not to his heirs.